Good morning. I too am an alcoholic. My name is Martin. I'm glad the chair introduced me first, or nobody would understand my name. I didn't always talk like this. It was worse at one time, you know. This is the best I can do. I would like to thank everybody for coming this morning, you know, and this is such a great thing for me, you know, and I was just thinking, I was sitting there, this might not be the right time to start to try and think about what I'm going to say, because I get so nervous about this, and I was just telling Marcel, like, sometimes I almost pass out. And so the theme is joy, the joy of living, and the first thing I thought about when they asked was, opposed to what? Opposed to the agony of dying on your own in an alley, getting robbed as you die, because you won't need the stuff anymore, you know? The agony of watching your mother break her heart because you're the son that's just no good, and it's her fault. You know, that's not how we started out. I was brought up in Glasgow, Scotland, and if you were going to be alcoholic and you wanted to do it quick, go there. They got a six-month program. It's like the unrehab. Okay? But that's not to be disparaging to Glasgow, because my mother never drank in her whole life. My mother's off of Irish people, and she signed a pledge at 16 and never drank a day in her life. And my father never drank very much, because he had all these kids to bring up, you know. And he was one of those guys that responsibility was first for him. And, you know, my brother's the same way. You know, I don't know if you've got a brother like this. I got a brother, oh God, I love this guy so much now. But he was the guy your mother would say, you be in here at 10 o'clock. And at 5 to 10, he would turn up. And when it came my turn to say, for that to be said, my mother would say, you be in here at 10 o'clock. And she'd have to say AM or PM. And what day? And do collect calls count? You know? Because that's the kind of kid I was. And like, I just learned that naturally. Like, that was the way my brother learned to be a good guy, I learned not to be. And it was natural. Nobody taught me, nobody sat me down and said, this is what you have to do to upset people. And then I started to drink. Oh, you know, I'm one of those alcoholics who liked to drink. And I need to be honest, if I could have drank the way I did from I was 13, on my birthday at 13 till I was 13 and a half, I'd still be drinking. But I lost it after that, you know, and I always drank to excess, and I always said what I thought was the right profound thing, and as it turned out, it was the wrong thing. And so at 13, and then at 15, I'm drinking too much at 15. How can you drink too much at 15? You're a baby. You're a little guy, and you're 15, and you're, you know, I'd been sent to the boxing to try and learn me discipline, and all it learned me to do was fight. And at 17, my father threw me out of the house, and at 19, he threw me out of the country. And people always laugh at that, except it was me that got threw out. And I'll tell you how it happened. My mother, I used to come into the house between about 14 and 7 when I was 17 years old, and my mother was really Irish Catholic. And I used to hear clink, 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 clink. And it was my mother dropping the rosary bead into the dish beside the bed because she'd be laying saying rosaries for me. I never meant my mother never to get no sleep, but that's what happened. And at 19, my father had a choice to make between me and my mother, and he chose my mum. And I came to Canada. You know, I went to Canada to live because, to be quite honest, and this is one of my lifetime resentments, the Americans wouldn't have me. I feel so bad. I would have been good here. And one more alcoholic here would have meant a whole lot less than one more in Canada, because there's so few people. So I come to Canada, and I got a sister who's doing really well. Do you know, another one that came in at 5 to 10 at night. And I go mad. And I think by the time I'm 20, I'm beyond all recall. That I'm on that road that we go on, that always ends up in two ways for us. And we talk about the jumping off point, and that's where I ended up. One point I couldn't see my life without alcohol, and then I get to the point I can't see it with or without it. And I'm in that alcoholic dilemma. If If I take a drink, I'm going to die. And if I don't take a drink, I'm going to die. And there was no intervention for me, and it had to be an introduction to a God in my life. And I'm lucky about the God thing, because we got it rammed into our head every day at home. So I knew what God was all about. I just didn't know what the spiritual God was about. I didn't know what the forgiving God was about. And but I need to tell you, I went back to the God of my fathers. It does me fine. And so at 20, I came to my first AA meeting. 20 years old. That's kind of, well, then that was young. Now it's like you can't even qualify for ICIPA at 20. And so I come here at 20, and I don't get it, because I don't want to stop drinking. I want to stop being in trouble. And I never came here for recovery. I came for relief. And at 21, I married this little girl who was an innocent, a total innocent, and she didn't deserve what she got. And so I could go through a litany the next 5 years, but you know what it's like. If you're an alcoholic like me, at 25, I end up on Skid Row. Skid Row. The agony of dying alone, and that's how I know that happens, because in that Skid Row I was on, guys died on their own. And guys stole their shoes, because that's what they did. And something happened for me. I got a moment of clarity. I was thinking about that too. A moment of clarity is about as much as I could take. Could you imagine having an hour of clarity? You'd be off the nearest building. You would just jump. It would be too much. So God gives us moments of clarity. And I seen myself for what I was and not what I thought I was. And I still couldn't see for what I could become. And so what happens to me? I get sober at 25 years of age. And my dry date is August the 1st, 1983. So I've been here a little while. But don't give me any priority. I was just talking to Jonathan this morning. And I think they must do it better in Texas, because he's so much more sober than me. He turned up with nothing and still was running a great meeting. That bad, Jonathan? So anyway, so what happens? I get through, and I'm one of those guys, I'm lucky I get to bring my kids up. They never see a drunken father. I get to go through the death of my mother and father. And I die. When they die, I'm sober. That's the joy of living. And that sounds terrible. You know, I think joy for me as opposed to happiness. Happiness is like this weekend will be really happy for a lot of people. You'll go home, you'll all be about 18 pounds lighter because of all the walking you have to do. You know, and then some people will be saying, I wish they had an international every weekend, right? That's happy. But I'll tell you, I'll give you two instances of joy and then I'm going to sit down, because I know these two other folks are just great people too. My mother was 70 on June the 1st, 1994, 70 years of age. The good book says 80+10, and my mum got it. And I sent her flowers. You know, and I used to call my mum Wednesdays and Saturdays in Scotland every week. And I called her this Wednesday, and she says, that was the day of her birthday. She says, oh, Martin, those flowers came. Beautiful. I said, that's okay, mum. Are they better than Harry's? That's my brother. I just want my flowers to be better than Harry's. Because I'm only 10 years sober, you know. Well, I'm only 10 years, right? So I'm still competition with my brother. She says, Martin, I put those roses out to cut them, to put them in the vase. She says, I've never had roses before, son. She says, but when I put them in the vase, there was only 11 of them. I said, mum, take the phone over to the mirror. And I don't know about your mother, but my mother never walked. My mother glided. She was 4 feet 11, 5 feet. She weighed 220 pounds. Didn't matter how you looked at her, she weighed 220 pounds. She glides over to the mirror. She says, yes. I said, mum, there's the 12th rose. I love you. And that's joy. That's joy when you can tell the people you love the most that you love them. And I'll give you this other instance. My daughter... I have this daughter who's like me, but not alcoholic. She's forthright, and she's honest, and she's crazy. And she gets married to this guy, and they have a wee boy. And she says, Dad, do you think you would look after Matthew while we work? I said, sure. And every night I get to look at Matthew as he's sleeping. Lying there, and he's safe, and he's secure, and he's got that look on him that he knows he's loved. And I'm doing the loving. Because he doesn't understand God loves him yet. So I'm doing the loving for God right now. And that's joy. And I just won't have that today. I'll be on my deathbed and I'll have that. And it's because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the God that I understand that yous gave me. You know, we get so desperate, or I did at least, but my experience is most people don't come here, stay here, I'm really desperate. We get so desperate, we're prepared to listen to stuff. And I listened to a little guy who said to me, Martin, no more. From now on, I make your mind up. And this is what he told me, and this is what I'll tell you as I sit down. God loves you because he brought you here. You need to love him back and stay here. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. This time I'd like to introduce Marcel.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marcel. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'd be in the bright lights. We're supposed to talk about the joys of living. I met a lot of people this morning, and they're all joys of living. Almost everybody you meet here, you can see the joy of living in them. Everybody is happy. We're having a, maybe not everybody, most everybody that we meet. I drank to get the joys of living. That's the main reason I drank, to feel good. I don't know when I grew up. I better set a time here. All right. When I grew up, there was a lot of drinking around home, and I don't know, for some reason, I didn't seem to fit in. I was shy, and first times I drank, I didn't feel good. I just passed out. But I kept on drinking because it seemed that the older crowd, they were having a great time. They were having the joys of living, and I couldn't wait. I remember my older brother and his friends, they were drinking, and we grew up in the country, they were drinking in the barn and talking about going to dances, having fights and smashing cars and going to jail, and that sounded like fun. I couldn't wait to grow up and do the same thing they did. At least I'd have a story. You know, when we drink, we brag about this stuff, and when I was young, it impressed me quite a bit. When I started drinking, I just passed out. I couldn't handle it. But I found a way I could drink more after a while. And they say, like most alcoholics, a lot of alcoholics, when we start drinking, we can handle booze and more people. We can brag about it. And at the end of my drinking, people couldn't believe how quick I got drunk. But for quite a while, when I drank, it felt good. You know, I had all the promises when I was drinking. You know, if I keep that right buzz going. I drank to feel good, and I didn't want to get overly drunk, but a lot of times I just overshot the feeling. I guess alcoholics, when we drink, as soon as you feel good, you want to feel better, and you drink more, and then first thing I crossed that line that I was a blackout or too drunk to enjoy myself. The program, if I couldn't feel good in AA, I don't think I'd be here. The program, I learned to feel even better than when I drank. When I drank, I felt good a lot of times. You know, some people say they didn't, you know, their worst day sober is better than their best day drunk, but not for me. When I was drinking, I had the right buzz. I could have stayed there for thousands of years. You know, I just, life was good, all my friends were fun, and but being an alcoholic, it progressed. I remember the first time I got introduced to AA, my brother had joined AA, and he gave me the big book. And I read it, and I remember one thing stuck to my head. If you're an alcoholic, it'll always get worse, never better. It'll keep progressing. I don't know where it was in the big book, but the first time in my life, I started to look, and I could see that how I gradually got worse and worse, and I hadn't noticed it was so slow. So So anyway, at the end of my drinking, there was no joy living anymore. I was just in blackouts or hangovers. That's all it gave me. And if I go back to drinking, I'm 100% convinced that's what I'll get, blackouts and hangovers. The good times were like that little blimp when I watch movies with submarines and the radar just goes boop. It's gone. That's what I get at the end of my drinking. You know, at the beginning, I could get the joy of living all weekend. You know, it would last party, all weekend parties, but at the end. So when I came to AA, I took me 4 or 5 years, but finally, the last time I came, I started to go a lot of meetings and do what was suggested, and I got, you know, what they call the pink cloud down home. I guess it's the joy of living. I had the promises. Gave me a taste if I worked the program, what I'd get. You know, I had a hit of bottom. I got my joy of living through not feeling good. Because I hit a bottom to force me to come to AA. And when I came to AA, the first few years, life was good. I got GSR, my group, and go to meetings. But then I crashed. It was 3 years in sobriety. Went through a divorce, and I had never handled something like that emotionally without booze. I got very depressed. I went on sick leave, and I was going to move my old geographical ways, and people in the program told me about the geographical cure, so instead I went to a treatment center. At 3 years sober, they're working myself. And I remember going down there. You know, I had moments of clarity in my thoughts. I don't know where it came from. There was a thought came that if I didn't share everything when I was there, I might never, ever feel good. Because I'm a loner by nature, and I usually don't share with anybody. And when I went there, it was here in the States. I'm from Canada, in Pennsylvania. And I remember I shared everything with a counselor. That was one of the big gifts. I started to feel better. All what I thought was terrible wasn't that bad. I felt like equal with everybody, you know. I might do something bad that other people wouldn't do, but they'll do something that I wouldn't do. So we're all the same. And then I was forced to look at the steps and to really look down to see how to get out of my misery. I was kind of depressed for a couple of years. One of the best steps I did was 8 and 9. It says in step 8, in the 12 and 12, 8 and 9 is to get the best possible relationship with every human being we meet on this planet. And I've worked hard on that. And one of the joys of living is to feel good with everybody that you meet. You know, if I have no resentments, people are a lot friendlier. And I can meet people. You know, when I travel now, everybody I meet is nice. Because before I had resentments, I found the program taught me resentment isn't about a specific person, it's about their personality. If I have a resentment against a certain personality when I travel, all those personality triggers my not feeling good. The program taught me that if I let go of that, everybody I meet is a joy to meet, you know. And they seem happy to see me, and I'm happy to see them, although we don't even know each other. That's a big gift. When I had resentments, if I met someone that kind of remotely looked like someone I resented, I think I'd send them bad vibes, and they weren't very friendly, and I was pissed off. People aren't nice in this city. But, you know, I got a lot of gifts along the way just by working the steps and sharing with people. Little things like how to reduce stress. I used to worry a lot. You know, people say, well, why pray if you worry? Or why worry if you pray? You know, and I got thinking of that. Every little thing, it helps me to feel good that I get in this program. And whenever I don't feel good, I know I'm off the beam. Same as when I drank, Every time I didn't feel good when I drank because I was in a hangover. Go get more booze, you'll feel better. When I don't feel good in the program, get back on track and I'll feel better. And it works every time. It takes time, though, because it took me a couple of years. When I went through my divorce, I didn't want to be on this planet. I didn't want to go back drinking. AA didn't seem to make me feel good. But after I worked the steps a couple of years later, I never felt better. I remember people who used to say, well, you know, be grateful God gave you life. Well, I didn't want to be on this planet. Why should I be grateful? I would have wished I never came here. But, you know, now I feel good. And just by the program, the gifts that I got out of it, and I can share with people. I have to share if I want to feel good. I found out I can't get the joy of living on my own. Being a loner, I thought I'd solve all my problems by myself, but I have to share stuff with people to let it out if I want to feel good. I can't keep it inside. And, you know, it keeps working. And I don't know, there's so many little things like worrying. Some people ask me if I'd be nervous coming here. And I remember I heard that a person worked in a big company, and people ask him, how come you're not stressed, you know, with all other people in your line of business? He says, I never worry about the same thing twice. I wait till the event happens, then I worry. So I never thought about what I was going to do here, and if I'm stressed, well, at least it's only for 20 minutes. You know? Because I always used, when I came in, even I was 7, 8 years sober, I used to think I had defect. My thinking was my biggest problem. I used to think I had a great technique in life. If I expect the worst will, when the event happens, I won't be hurt as bad. But the program taught me that if it's, the event is 2 months down the road, I get stressed for 2 months. Now I expect the best, and if the worst happens, I'm only stressed for that day or half a day, because I got tools and I got friends. And now anything in my life in the future, I always expect the best. I always see the best. When I think of it, I can enjoy life, and when the thing happens, I got AA. I got friends. Doesn't matter if I'm in any city I'm at. A people are ready to help me everywhere, and we kind of connect, you know. We don't, even though we don't know each other, you know. When I go to meetings and I hear people I never heard before, they share something personal. It makes me feel good. Anyway, I don't know what else to say there, but what am I doing on time? Maybe share a couple of little other things, that little techniques that I learned. And it's not because I'm smart. I learned these things. It's all people in these rooms that, you know, it's amazing. Now, I guess usually, well, I don't know what to say. My higher power has told me to shut up. So have a good day.
Thank you, Marcel. Now I'd like to introduce Karen.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic. I get to bring up the rear. These two dudes are from Canada. I'm from Vermont. Some people... Vermont! I'm a boy! Birthplace of Bill W. and Dr. Bob, and some of you may not know this, but Vermont is not in Canada. So, just wanted to, yeah. He's not sure, I can tell. He's going, I don't know, I think it might be in Canada. Okay, so the joy of living, let me just say, one of the things that occurred to me yesterday when I was walking around through the hordes of people, I don't know if any of you guys know The Walking Dead. It's a television you know, about zombies. Yesterday, I thought, this is like the walking live. This is like the walking joy. This is like being amongst people who are just so grateful to be alive and to be in Atlanta. It's like, I feel like me talking about the joy of living, I should just point to all you guys and say, yay! We are alive! We're sober! Seriously, really? Oh my God, it's like amazing. Okay, so when I was growing up, I sort of mixed up the joy of living with the joy of pleasure. I thought I was looking for relief and pleasure, and that would bring me joy. And, you know, sometimes when I talk, I think about what I was like before I picked up a drink, because let me just tell you, I've never been too tightly wrapped. Always been a little bubble off center. Little bubble. And I was always nervous. I was always anxious. I asked these guys if they were nervous. I think it was Marty said to me, what am I... He said, there's nothing to be nervous about. Just stand up there because and talk, because you know that everybody's judging you. I thought, he did, he said that. Thanks a lot, Marty. Well, that's how I felt most of my life. I felt like everybody could see me. And what was in here was, like, not good. It wasn't good. I never felt comfortable. I always felt responsible for everything and everybody. My mom would say, you are the source of my happiness. And I think, now other people would think, that's a loving thing to say to your daughter. And I would think, oh, crap, her happiness depends on me. How am I going to fulfill that expectation? I hate her. You know, how can she say that to me? And, I mean, I was always nervous and anxious about everything. And the only thing that helped when I was growing up usually was maybe a cruller. Or I'd go to the movies and I'd forget about myself. But I was so self-obsessed and felt so bad about myself for so long. And also, I had this sense that I was really evil inside. And that if people could see me, they would know how evil I was, because I had these impulses that I couldn't control. It just seemed like I tried to be good. I don't know if any of you identify, but I tried to be good, and then I would just have to be bad. There was something in me that just, like, I can't continue to be good. And I remember when I was a little kid, I would say my prayers like a good little girl. I'd say the prayer for sick children and the Lord's Prayer. And I'd bless all my, I had two brothers. I'd bless them even. And then I'd bless all my stuffed animals, Bobo, Whitey, Junior. I mean, I still remember their names. And then there would be this little impulse that would sort of bubble up inside of me, this nasty little evil impulse, after saying all these prayers. And I'd go, I try to push it down, but then sometimes I would just go, oh, go to hell, Jesus. And I thought, oh, my God, I am so evil. I am evil inside and out. I'm doomed. I've just ruined it. I've ruined it all. Because I was good at that. I mean, I was good at, like, being okay, and then I'd ruin it. I was so afraid of that impulse. And so I was always looking for relief. I was looking for escape. I was looking for pleasure. And I had no way of knowing that when I picked up my first drink, and I was kind of a late bloomer. I belonged to this athletic group in Wisconsin where you couldn't drink, you couldn't screw, you couldn't smoke, you couldn't swear, you couldn't do anything. It was like, you're athletic, you just have to be athletic. And so I didn't really get going until I was about 18. I'm a late bloomer. I know some of you started at 13 and 8. But I truly believe that I crossed that invisible line into alcoholism in my mother's womb. I think I just, like, popped out with the whole thing except the drink. And so when I took a drink, I knew I'd found the answer. I'd found relief. I found a sense of belonging. I always felt like separate from people. But if I had a drink, you and I, there was something special. I would look in your eyes and I'd know. And it didn't matter if you were a total stranger. We connected. And I wanted that feeling of belonging, and I wanted that feeling of pleasure, and I wanted that feeling of relief, and I drank for that. And I drank until I was alone, and the only way that I could feel a part of the human race was by drinking alone in my own apartment. I felt more a part of the human race alone in my apartment drinking than I did out in amongst you, because you scared me. You wanted something from me. You expected something from me. And I knew I didn't have what you wanted. I knew it. I didn't know what you wanted, really, but I knew you wanted something and I didn't have it. And so drinking really was the answer for me. So the joy, there was no joy. The joy in Mudville, whatever. There was no joy in my life in the last, I don't know, 7 years of my drinking, probably. And then one morning, after I'd done it again, I'd come home and I wasn't going to get drunk. I was just going to have a glass of wine. This is before boxed wine, too, by the way. I got sober before they had boxes of wine. And so I was just going to have a little bitty drink. And, of course, it wasn't like I was overcome by an insane urge to drink. Like, I got to have more. It was just, changed my mind. I thought, I can have another drink. That's how the compulsion worked for me. I can do this. And so I had, of course, drunk myself into a stupor. I sort of passed out. I woke up the next morning and I said, I remember being on the, sitting on the end of my bed and saying, I hit the end of my bed and I said, God damn it, do something. And I had no way of knowing that that was the first sincere prayer that I offered. God damn it, do something. And what I did was I unleashed a power greater than myself to intervene in my life. And about 2 weeks later, I was on the hand of God, was it the long arm of the law, when it reached out and stopped me on Highway 405, and the officer asked if I'd been drinking, and I'd been really drinking quite a bit, and I was on my way home to finish some more against my will, and he had me get out of the car, and he did the little sobriety test thing that many of us know. And I had never, you know, I told him I had a glass of wine, whatever. And he said, okay, you know, point to your nose, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then he said, okay, put one arm behind you. All right, I did that pretty well. And then all of a sudden, before I knew it, the other arm was behind me. And I'd just been handcuffed and put in the back seat of a cruiser. And I went off to jail. Now, I know many of you have been to jail many times. I am not naive. I am at an international convention. I know we have lots of people who spent a lot of time in jail. Institutions, whatever. For me, going public, being in jail, was it was like permission. I needed permission to ask for help. I wasn't a person who asked for help. I wasn't a person who joined. I'm not a joiner. I finally got to a point where I had to ask for help. I guess one of the things I want to say about joy is this. Joy is the result of a faithful trusting acceptance of God's will in my life when it seems not joyous. That's the weird thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I did not think it was very joyous for me to be in jail. I did not think it was very joyous for me to have a drinking problem. And yet, It has delivered me to the greatest joy I have ever experienced in my entire life. To the joy of waking up every morning sober. To the joy of getting to know people like you that I've never met before. So much. I just want to say that when they put me in jail, they slammed the door behind me. And I thought to myself, some of you in Vermont have heard this before. All right, tomorrow I'm calling Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm not taking any more birth control pills. More than these guys could say, right? And I have no idea why that was one thought in my mind. I really don't know, but it's the truth, okay? So, all right. So the next day I called Alcoholics Anonymous and I went to my very first meeting. It took me about 10 months of screwing around and trying to do it my own way through the marijuana maintenance program or, you know, whatever else was going on that I did. Like I told you, I'm not a joiner. Until finally, I got so desperate in this half-assed kind of, I'm not really sober, I'm not really in AA, I'm not really drinking, I'm not, you know. I finally said another prayer. I said, okay, God. These are the kind of prayers I used to say. Sometimes today I maybe even say these prayers, but I said, okay, God. You're the all-knowing, you're the omnipotent, you're the most wonderfulest, although you're the controller of the universe according to you, these people in AA. You know, I don't know. I don't have a higher power really much, but they say you're everything. So find me a sponsor. And then I got on my bike, and I bumped into a woman who needed a ride to a meeting. And somebody had told me that a sponsor is somebody who loves the program, who has a couple of years of sobriety at least, who walks like they talk, who doesn't take up more than two parking spaces, and, you know, puts money in the meter. This was all new to me. I mean, I was always looking for an edge, a way out of things, a way around. So I took this woman to the meeting. And as we're walking in, I noticed that there was a woman who got out of her car and she saw that her car was over two spaces, you know, parked in the middle. She moved her car. She got out of her car and she looked and it was in two parking spaces and she moved into one space. And I followed that woman like a puppy dog right into that meeting. And I asked her to sponsor me. And here's another example of joy is the result of faithful trusting God's will when it seems not joyous. She was a member of a dreaded group that I had been told to stay away from. And then they were like the Young Republicans of AA. You know, you go into a meeting and they go, hi, welcome, welcome. And I was like, leave me alone. They shoved donuts in your face and coffee and telephone numbers, and it was like, I don't want to be there. And she was a member of that group. God's will. Faithful, trusting, acceptance. I became a member of that group, and I owe my sobriety to that group and to the foundation that they laid for me. I owe my sobriety to that sponsor, that first sponsor, to whom she has since passed away, but I know she's with me. I hear her in the way that I talk to my sponsees. And that gives me so much joy. So I sat down with my first sponsor. This is like 8 months, probably 10 months after I was arrested. And I said to her, Jen, I don't know what to do. My life's a mess. And I think I'm pregnant. Remember that I'm not taking any more birth control pills thing? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I can't have a baby now. My life is a mess. It's like my ex-husband is in Massachusetts. He was only here for a little while, and I'm kind of like was involved. And she said to me, "Don't worry about it. Just give me your fear. Give me your worry. I will do that for you. Your job now is just to stay sober a day at a time. Just a day at a time." And so, for some reason, I mean, that was the first time anybody said anything like that to me. I had no idea what she was meaning. Give it to me, give it to me. She was sort of saying, turn it over. Let me worry for you. And for some reason, I was able to do that. I have no idea why, really, but I was able to give her that. I remember, truthfully, walking out of that restaurant, there was a rainbow in the sky. And, you know, I was just like, oh, God, okay, I can do this today. And that woman taught me how to stay sober a day at a time. She taught me to show up at meetings. She taught me to stick my hand out and say, "Hi, my name is Karen." She told me to get to meetings early and do that. And I said, "Well, what do I say after? I mean, I don't know how to talk to people. What do I say after, 'Hi, my name is Karen'?" And she said, "Just ask them how they are. They're alcoholics. They'll just talk forever. They'll take care of it for you, you know?" And I thought, okay. And so I, you know, by doing stuff like that, and you guys talked about it, by learning how to do things like that in AA, I actually learned how to do it out in the real world. And people think I'm really friendly. People think I'm really interested in them. She said, "You don't have to be interested in them. Just let them talk." It's like, okay, you know, I can learn how to do that. I'm coming to the end of what I want to say, too, because the last part of the joy of living that I want to share with you is, well, maybe not. I do tend to go on. In fact, if you could pass me the water there, Marcel, I could probably go on another 15 minutes or so here. You gotta love these guys. You gotta. Oh, you gotta. Okay. So, remember that kid? That kid I didn't want to have? The kid I was afraid to have? Joy is the result of faithful, trusting acceptance of God's will when it seems not joyous. I had a wonderful baby girl, and I remember walking. I was living in Venice at the time, in California, and I remember walking on the beach and thinking, I can't do this. I can't be a mother. I don't know how to be a mother. I never really thought I would ever have a child. The first three dogs I had, it's bad news. One drowned, one ran away and got kidnapped, and the other one we shot because it was killing chickens and things like that. And I thought, this is not a good track record for children. Yeah, so how am I going to do this? How am I going to have a kid? I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do this. And you know the phrase, one day at a time? I just got a little kind of like a little piece, and I was talking to some of my AA sisters, and they said, just do this a day at a time, and it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. I kept thinking, what am I going to do when her heart's broken? What am I going to do when she falls off her bicycle? You know, I mean, I'm way out there in the future, and they were just like, just take it a day at a time. So I want to fast forward just a little bit, like, maybe when she was about 7 months old and I was a little over a year sober, we moved to Vermont, where I've lived since. And my sponsor always told me in the morning, every morning, in fact, one of the first things she said to me was, every morning I want you to get down on your knees and I want you to say the first three steps and then the prayer on page 63 of the big book. God, I offer myself to you to build and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I might better do your will. Take away my difficulties. A little aside, doesn't mean we don't have them. just when they come. Take away my difficulties so victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help of your love and your power and your way of life. May I do your will always. She told me to do that every morning. And I said to her at the time, I said, I don't believe in God. And she looked at me and she said, and I said, why should I do this? And she looked at me and she said, okay, that word why goes out of your vocabulary right now. You do not ask why. Sincerity is not a prerequisite to prayer. You just say your prayers. And so I did. I started that every morning. I went through the first three steps, not the version in the 12 steps and 12 truths, just the steps. I remember, because I had told one time, I told a sponsee to do the first three steps, and she every morning was reading the first three steps on her knees in the 12 steps books, you know, the steps and traditions books. I was like, no, 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 no. Just say the steps and then the prayer on page 63. So I was living in Vermont. My daughter was maybe 18 months old at the time. I'm kneeling by the bed. She's jumping around on top of the bed. She's jumping, jumping, jumping. I'm saying, you know, the first three steps. And then a prayer on page 63. I got to the part of that my difficulties, take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I might help of your love, your power, your way of life. May I do your will always. And then I always ended my prayer with, thank you, God. And all of a sudden, I hear from this little kid jumping up and down, you're welcome. Now, that's joy, I'm telling you. That is joy. And today, that daughter of mine has two daughters of her own, ages 4 and 1. We just had a birthday party for one couple weeks ago, and we're going to a birthday party for the first one at the end of the month. And the joy that I've known because you have showed me how to forget myself, how to be of service to other people, how to get connected with a power that I believe in, that I believe whose will for me is the source of joy in my life, regardless of whether it seems not joyous. I can't express the gratitude and the joy and the honor that I feel for being here and being able to share with you a little bit of what you've given to me. I just want to thank you all and thank my fellow panelists. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Karen. I would like to thank Martin and Marcel and Karen for sharing with us this morning. Thank you all. And in closing, I was thinking while they were talking, I've had a couple of months to think about the joys, what brings me joy. And, you know, we have a saying here you'll hear around meetings that some are sicker than others. And one of my great joys is the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am fortunate enough to have a position in the structure. And the joy it brings to me is not what I'm talking about. The joy that I get is I get to see new people join the service structure. We get a new group of GSRs every 2 years that participate. And my joy is watching them learn about our service structure, learn about our traditions and our concepts, and learn and really assume responsibility for our fellowship. You see, service is not about us here. We're sober today. I think we're all sober in this room. The service is about the alcoholic that is not yet sober, the alcoholic that has not even been born yet. And those alcoholics for generations to come will perpetuate this fellowship, or they'll have somewhere to come just like we did. And Another joy, too, I was thinking about while they were sharing is, you know, she was talking about zombies and how we're all live zombies here this weekend. But when newcomers come to us, they are like zombies. They're desperate and hopeless. And their eyes are dull and, you know. And then what's a great joy to see, and we're so fortunate, to be able to see these people come in a very brief period of time. All of a sudden you see a sparkle in their eye. And they've got it. It's one of my great joys, one of all of our great joys, I think, is to be able to watch that happen. You know, when I first got sober, I kind of struggled with some of the spiritual principles and stuff. I was the book says violently anti-religious. And that was me. But I couldn't deny the fact when I would see these newcomers come in and see this spark and see them have this awakening. And it helped me so much to grow when I was here. Give me hope that someday that would happen to me. Anyway, thank you all for coming this morning. So good to be here. Thanks to the speakers once again. Thank you all.